PCJ Radio International presents the longest-running international show, The Happy Station Show, produced and presented by Keith Pehon.
Well, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome again to another edition of the program. It's very nice to have you with me for the next little while. We actually have a few things to get to today. And our first music selection is because he happens to be one of my favorite composers for film music. He's done many films and many television series, not just in Europe, but also in North America during his career. And he won an Oscar recently at the recent Oscars that were held in the whatever theater it was in California. It was for the score and soundtrack to the latest Quentin Tarantino film. His name is not Quentin Tarantino. Actually, it's Ennio Morricone. Now, Ennio Morricone is actually very well known for doing the themes and scores to the spaghetti westerns that came out many, many years ago that starred Clint Eastwood. He has a very distinctive and unique style. And at over 80 years old, he actually finally won an Oscar for this film that he did with Quentin Tarantino, which is quite brilliant. But we're going to take a listen to an old recording that he did for one of the spaghetti westerns. The track is called A Fistful of Dynamite. Thank you. A Fistful of Dynamite, the legendary Italian composer Ennio Morricone. Quite recently, I've been involved in a very, very interesting project. A few weeks ago, a friend of mine, Natasha Song, who actually was on the program a couple of years ago, talking about something, but I don't remember what it was. Anyway, she is a director, a film director, and she's working on a documentary at the moment of some Taiwan pop singers from about 40 or 50 years ago. It's a whole series that she is doing. Anyway. One of her big challenges is actually finding material from back then. Because, and we've seen this happen not just here, but also in other places, sometimes master tapes are never kept. And then locating a vinyl LP to take something from is very difficult. They don't have a very big budget. Anyway, one of the singers that she interviewed for the series said to her, "Oh, by the way, I have some tapes." Yeah, she had like 6 tapes. They were recordings that were made for television about 40 years ago in Taiwan, television recordings. And Natasha started editing the film, and she showed me 10 minutes and said to me what I thought, and I went, "Oh, actually, it's quite good, except I have a question." My question being is, you just showed some open reel tape, but I haven't heard anything during the 10 minutes that you showed me. Are you planning to use it? Her response was, "Well, the problem is we can't transfer them. We don't know anybody who has a machine." And it was that moment I went, I put my hand up. I went, "Well, you know, I do." And her mouth dropped open. She said, "Oh, wonderful, wonderful, wonderful." So she got the tapes to me. And, you know, this is the problem with storing open reel tape. You never know what you're going to come across. Now, these tapes are over 40 years old, and they were not exactly stored in a climate-controlled environment. And I looked at them right away, and I went, "Aha, I think we're going to have a problem, because there's something that does appear on tape if it's not stored properly, and that's mold." Now, there wasn't much mold on them, and that was actually able to be clean that. But the other problem is something called sticky tape syndrome, which is when the tape has been on a reel for more than 40 years and hasn't been moved. It all clumps and sticks together as one piece. Now, not all brands of tape do this. It's usually the lower grade recording tape. Now, back in the day, there were a lot of companies, of course, that made tape. BASF, Agfa, Ampex, 3M, Orwell. I mean, there was tons of them. And depending on where it was recorded and what studio, they would use different qualities of tape. So I'm looking at these 6 reels, and I went, we have a problem. And that was the Scotch 111 tape that used to be made. Now, this tape was good for, let's say, home use or everyday use. But it's not the kind of tape that you want to use to record something to archive it, because the tape had a tendency to shrink over time, which is exactly what happened with these ones. And also become one big clump. So, the process then began of how to fix this, because the tracks that she really wanted to use actually were on one of those tapes. It was on one of the worst ones. So I had to send them to a friend of mine in Australia who works at an archive institute. And they have special ovens where they bake the tapes. Yeah, they bake the tapes at 34 degrees. Over a long period of time, 24 to 36 hours, and that does something to the magnetic particles on the plastic, which is the tape, and you can actually play it once. If you don't, what happens is, when the tape is running through the machine, going over the metal parts, it starts sticking to the metal parts, and makes this god-awful noise, and the recording is just unusable. So once you bake it, you can actually get one good play, and that's it. And then if you want to play it again, you have to wait and then bake it again. So, the tapes were sent to Australia, they finally arrived here, and I finally had a chance to listen to them. And actually, quite interesting. There's some really interesting material on it. Mostly English songs recorded in Taiwan in the, 60s and early 70s. And I thought we would play one track from one of those tapes right now. Now, the tape itself hasn't been remastered, so what you are about to hear is exactly what was coming off the open reel tape as the deck was playing it. Nothing has been done to fix the sound. And considering that it was over 40 years ago, recorded on a really poor quality tape, and heaven knows what kind of equipment it was recorded on, it isn't too bad. I think you know the song.
Yesterday, all my troubles seem so far away. Now it looks as though they're here to stay. Oh, I believe in yesterday. Suddenly, I'm the tough girl I used to be. There's a shadow hanging over me. Yesterday came suddenly. Why he had to go, I don't know. He wouldn't say. I said something wrong. Now I long for yesterday. Love was such an easy game to play. Oh, I need a place to hide away. Oh, I believe in yesterday.
Yeah, of course, the song was Yesterday, and we'll play some more, actually, from those tapes in the coming weeks. You're listening to Happy Station, coming to you from PCJ Radio International. We're now going to go into the old RNW archives. And this is a very interesting program because it was produced by Radio Nederland and the Canadian Broadcasting Company. Yes, it was a co-production from 1967. It was actually produced the year of Expo 67 when it was held in Montreal. And by the way, at Expo 67, Eddie Starts did go to it. This is a program that Radio Nederland produced in cooperation with the CBC called 100 Years of Dutch Immigration to Canada. It's quite interesting.
In Canada's centennial year, we look back on 100 years of Dutch emigration to Canada. This is the third and last program in the series, Emigration Today. Fluctuations in post-war emigration to Canada are caused by different factors. What really happened may be best described in the book Thwarted Exodus by Peter Hofstede. He writes, up to 1953, the Canadian economy had shown an increase every year. In autumn of 1953, for the first time, a few signs of friction occurred and an economic reaction set in, which also manifested itself in the labour market. It was given much publicity in the Dutch press. Unemployment had become a stereotype conception in the Netherlands. There is no doubt about it that the waning interest in Canada shown by prospective immigrants was partly due to the influence of this publicity. Another factor was Holland's growing prosperity, which made emigration less attractive. And when, in the beginning of the 60s, a shortage of labour in Holland became significant, a sharp drop in emigration occurred. During the past few years, a rising line in emigration in Canada is noticeable. In the two previous programs on Dutch emigration to Canada, we have heard about the difficult problems faced by the new settlers who arrived in the big wave of the late 40s and the early 50s. We also know a bit more about the hardships put upon the 19th century emigrants. But what is the situation now? What is the impression of the youngest post-war generation arriving in Canada in this centennial year? 22-year-old Rietje van Hoorn, who married in Holland just before she left, now lives in Montreal. She hasn't had many opportunities yet to see more of Canada, but she knows already one thing for certain. Life in Canada is quite different from that in Holland. She finds everything easier, simpler, and less complicated. Here is how Rietje van Hoorn ends her letter recently published in a Dutch weekly. Quite consciously, we have established little contact with other Dutch people, because we came to Canada in the first place to get to know other kinds of people. Our friends are mainly other immigrants, Frenchmen, Englishmen, and an occasional Canadian. The latter are generally very homely and live in their own world where social life seems so important. Anyway, the newspapers are full of it. We don't regret we came to Canada, although what I should like to do when there is a chance is to ride my bike through old Amsterdam again and have a drink at the local cafe. Unquote. There are signs that overpopulation in Holland is once again, as it has been 20 years ago, an important motive for an increasing number of Dutchmen to leave for Canada and elsewhere. But what about the future? And is the current Dutch emigration policy correct? We have asked the opinion of Mr. Sheehan, the emigration attaché of the Canadian Embassy in The Hague.
The policy of the Dutch government, which encourages to some extent emigration. With the population pressure here, the Dutch government has decided to have a positive approach to emigration. The policy is not one of actively encouraging emigration, but of giving certain assistance to people who do want to emigrate. This resulted in the formation of the Netherlands Emigration Service and the setting up of the Dutch government emigration subsidy scheme. But if you look at it from a longer-term point of view, with the demographic situation here in Holland, I think the Dutch government's attitude is correct. There has to be a certain level, a certain flow of people out of the country. When you think of the country now with a population of 12.5 million, with the possibility by the end of this century of 20, 21 million, in an area, to compare with Canada, an area the size of Vancouver Island, it's difficult for me, being a Canadian, with my Canadian background, with the Canadian idea of space, to imagine this country with 21 million people, as it is now with 12.5 million people. It's simply too overcrowded.
And then we put another question to Mr. Sheehan. Are the kind of people who are now going to Canada any different from those who went in the years following the Second World War?
The reasons for which people are leaving are changing. As I said, in the early years after the war, during the years of large numbers of emigrants to Canada, the reasons were mainly economic. It was strictly a question of leaving a country with a difficult economic situation to try to improve oneself, one's position in Canada. Now things have changed. Anyone who wants a job here has one. Housing is improving. The way of life, material benefits of life are catching up with our Canadian standard of living. But the reason that people are going now is strictly to find a place for themselves and for their families, to find a place with a little more space, a little more elbow room. The people who are going to Canada now are usually young families. There are very few farmers going now, which would surprise a lot of people. There are many people who have the idea that the emigration to Canada from Holland is strictly agricultural. This was the case in 1950 or 1951. It is no longer. The people who are going now to Canada are a cross-section of the Dutch population.
More than 5,000 Dutch emigrants are expected to arrive in Canada this year. This is still far from the peak of 20,000 reached in 1952. Canada is still, as it always has been, at least after the war, the most popular country for prospective Dutch emigrants. 38% of all Dutch emigrants are destined for Canada. 20% leave for Australia. If we compare these figures with the total inflow of emigrants in Canada, the Dutch are almost insignificant. At least 10 times as many Italians and 18 times more people from the British Isles arrive each year in Canada. The figure for Germany is 3 times as high as that for Holland. But enough figures now. Let's ask Mr. Sheehan what the general attitude in Canada is about the Dutch immigrant.
They have done so well for themselves in the post-war period. Many of them are established in businesses. Many have very successful farms, especially in the southern Ontario area. And they're very welcome by Canadian employers, Canadian communities. The Dutch educational system produces very well-qualified trades people, craftsmen, technical people, and professionally qualified people. And these people are very welcome in Canada. There is a strong demand for qualified trades and technical people throughout Canada, and the Dutch people have a reputation of not only being well qualified, but being very adaptable to a new way of life. They learn English extremely rapidly, the ones who do not already speak English. They become members of the Canadian community with no difficulty whatsoever. The demand has been there for many years and will continue to exist. For this reason, we are trying to encourage the emigration to Canada of as many young Dutch people as we can possibly find.
Are these newcomers still going to the traditionally Dutch areas? Or is there a change noticeable here as well, Mr. Sheehan?
The settlement of Dutch people in Canada has traditionally been in the southern part of the province of Ontario. The area around Hamilton, London, Kitchener. The reason for this was that the people who went in the years right after the war were from agricultural background, and they went to what was considered to be an extremely good agricultural area, with the result that Dutch people now are very successfully established, many of them, in farms, good farms, in the southern part of Ontario. This pattern is changing to a certain extent, and the western part of Canada is now becoming more attractive as a destination for Dutch immigrants. Of course, with the large concentration of Dutch people in the southern part of Ontario, there is more of an attraction for them there. But there are other areas which are becoming more popular.
As Mr. Sheehan has just said, many Dutch immigrants are very well established in Canada, and most of them feel very Canadian already. But when Queen Juliana visited Ottawa earlier this year, thousands of Dutchmen gathered and cheered their queen. On that occasion, she addressed her enthusiastic countrymen in Dutch and said,
"Ik hoop dat u allemaal gelukkig bent hier, dat u hier echt een goede toekomst hebt gevonden. En ik kan u verzekeren, ja, u woont hier voor goed, de meeste van u. Ik woon hier maar tijdelijk, dat is wat anders. Maar het was goed wonen hier die 5 jaar. En ik hoop allemaal heel erg dat u ook die ervaring hebt en dat u het allemaal goed maakt en goede zaken doet en gelukkig bent met uw familie. En veel vrienden hebt hier en niet te veel heimwee en uw familie thuis wel eens ziet. Als het allemaal het geval is, dan is het, kan het leven goed zijn. En ik ben erg blij om hier te zien."
Summarizing, the Queen said, "I hope you're all very happy. I only lived here temporarily during the war. I assure you that Canada is a wonderful country and life can be very good here. I hope, too, that you will be successful in business and not be too homesick for the friends back in Holland. I have really enjoyed seeing you again." Finally, here is another impression of a young Dutch immigrant who recently arrived in Canada. Piet Seepkes is 22 years old, and I quote, "One hears the stories of Dutch friends who have been back in Holland vacationing. It was nice, of course, they say, but at the same time depressingly crowded. I feel that I've grown out of that sensitive Dutch skin. Housing shortage and overpopulation aren't any pressing problems for me anymore. I'm not involved in these problems any longer, just as little as I'm able to explain to my friends in Holland how the feeling of space has overwhelmed me here in Canada."
A program from 1967, produced by Radio Nederland and the CBC, on Dutch immigration to Canada. That's from the Radio Nederland archives. You're listening to Happy Station, coming to you from PCJ Radio International. Time for music again. And this is a request for some Ray Charles, "What I'd Say."
love you, Daddy, all night long, all right now. Hey, hey, all right. You see the girl with the diamond ring? She knows how to shake that thing, all right now, now. Mama, tell your pa, I'm gonna send you back to Arkansas. Oh, yes, ma'am. You don't do right. Don't do right. When you see me in misery, come on, baby, see about me now. See me in misery. Come on, baby, see about me now.
I should have mentioned earlier that if there is something from the Radio Nederland archive, if you think that we might have it, that you would like to hear, let us know. We do have a couple of special programs coming up this summer while we're on vacation that will feature some wonderful programs from the Radio Nederland archive. And you can write us at pcjqsl at pcjmedia.com and let us know. Now, we just discovered that we were having a problem with our email, our internal email. For some reason, messages were coming in, and we would reply, it doesn't matter from what email box, but nobody was getting them. So our IT people were working on it this week, and they figured out what the problem was. It was very strange. It just happened out of nowhere. And we only realized it because people were saying, well, you didn't respond back. Well, actually, we did respond back. No, we didn't. And sure enough, we actually did respond back, but the messages were never sent out. Don't know what happened. Really don't know what happened. One of the messages that we responded to, but the person never got, was to hear some Boney M. So we're going to do that right now, and Ma Baker.
Freeze! I'm Ma Baker. Put your hands in the air. Give me all your money.
This is the story of Ma Baker, the meanest cat from old Chicago town.
In all Chicago.
Ma Baker and Boney M. This week, when I was putting together another program, I came across a singer that I had totally forgotten about. And I think a lot of people have forgotten her. Which is a shame. She's no longer with us. She's from the United States, but had a big career in the UK as a jazz singer. I'm speaking of Susanna McCorkle. And she died at a very young age, very tragically. And she's one of those singers that you hear and you go, well, that sounds familiar. And you realize you couldn't really figure out, who it was. Part of the reason was because she never... Well, she did have a lot of success in the nightclub scene in the UK, and also some recording and television and radio in Britain, but didn't really become a popular jazz singer, let's say as popular as, Diana Krall, which is a shame, because I think she's very underrated and almost forgotten, which is really a shame. And I realized that I actually had a CD of hers, and she's singing a collection of songs by Johnny Mercer. So let's take a listen to one of them right now. The fantastic Susanna McCorkle at the Jazz Band Ball, featuring Kenny Ingram on piano, Ron Rubin on bass, Derek Hodge on drums, Danny Mose on tenor sax, Digby Fairweather on trumpet, and Duncan Lamont also on tenor sax. It was recorded in London in 1977.
Nickel would buy one drink of respectable rye. Piano players in the honky-tonks would have to work on the sly. One, two was known to a few, some steady habitués too. So the word of mouth spread around the South, solid entree new. You better dig that jazz band ball, 'cause it's a ball of them all. Four or five musicians in a small saloon invent a ragtime tune. They kind of made up their own brand without a note on the stand, and they called it D-I-X-I-E hyphen L-A-N-D land. Well, sir, you know it caught on. What's more, it was strictly bon ton. Was like the winner at the starting gate, the music got even gone. Jazz moved from over the tracks into the society shacks. It was wonderful and deductible from the income tax. You better dig that jazz band ball, it's a ball of them all. When the trumpet player took a monologue, the people said, ooh, hot dog. And when you asked them why, they'd yell, they kind of grin and say, well, when the band played J-A-double-Z, it's a V-A-double-L.
Susanna McCorkle with a song by Johnny Mercer at the Jazz Band Ball. Anyway, we're coming at the end of the program. Once again, our email address is pcjqsl@pcjmedia.com. We're going to end with a bit of Afro-Cuban rhythms from a group called Nueva Manteca. New Manteca, because there's another group called Manteca. This is the New Manteca. So new, old, and we don't know where they are. This is from an album that was released 6 years ago. I'm sorry, more than that, 7 years ago. And it was especially recorded for radio broadcast. The track is called Credo. So until next time, friends, I'm Keith Perron, wishing you well, saying so long, take care. Adios, amigos, auf Wiedersehen, and sayonara.